Welcome to Watchmen Minute, where we take a look at the director's cut of Zack Snyder's Watchmen 1 minute at a time. My name is Travis Bowe from the Real Comic Heroes Podcast.
I'm Eric Nash.
And I'm Thomas Butler from AtoZiggy.com.
How's it going, Thomas?
Pretty good, pretty good. How you guys doing?
Doing well. Minute 71 starts with Dan and Lori leaving the alley and ends with Hollis telling Dan about Dr. Manhattan.
I don't know about you guys, but the first thing I saw when this came through my email was the script that you guys sent me.
Sure.
For this minute, and it starts with Lori saying, us getting mugged. And for some reason, I wasn't familiar yet with the characters. It had been a while since I saw the movie, and I thought this sounded like, you know, like some sort of Incredible Hulk, like... limited English, us getting mugged. Like Captain Caveman.
Yeah, nice.
Bunga bunga. But then I rewatched the minutes and it made more sense.
Right, yeah. Now I kind of wish that all of her dialogue was in that.
Time for a fan edit.
Yeah,
somebody redubbed the whole movie.
You puppet on strings.
Stupid god man. Oh, it's puny. I totally messed that reference up.
Oh, yeah, that's okay. We'll edit it in to sound better. So don't worry about that.
Just chop that whole thing up.
Yeah, yeah. One of the most notable things for me in this minute is the camera work. Like around like second 8 until about second 50, it's just one, you know, continuous shot, which isn't a huge deal or anything. We've certainly seen longer, you know, these single take, single camera movement shots. So that's not the notable thing for me, but the thing that's like striking to me is that it starts out kind of tight on the two of them in the alley, where it's very dark and all this violence just took place. And then as the camera like backs up as they're walking towards the camera, walking out of the alley, it gets a little bit brighter. And as they get out to the street, like, you know, they're breathing more normally. You know, whereas when they were in the middle of the alley, they were, you know, breathing very heavily, and there's, you know, men groaning at their feet. And then it's like once they reach the sidewalk, they're just completely washed clean of what just happened. And then the camera kind of keeps going basically till it's, you know, across the street. And then like both Dan and Lori are like fully framed by the alley, and then they just go their separate ways. Like one goes left, one goes right. It's just, I really like the way the shot is composed. So,
yeah. Do you guys know how they did that? Like, did it require some post-production fudging around? Is it like, because it seems to have a kind of a green screen quality to it, and I don't know if they were able to do it just in one actual continuous shot down that set, because I know there was a set for this scene, right?
Yeah. They built the whole, you know, little portion of the city they built in a old like logging camp in Vancouver, or just outside Vancouver.
But I'm wondering if they had to do like some trickery to erase like dolly treads or something like that.
Or they could have been using like a, I don't know what, if it's a boom, but the could have been more like a camera on the back of a truck that was lifted, you know, kind of,
instead of
using track, they could have been using, you know, the camera mounted to a vehicle and then with an arm kind of thing. I've seen that before.
Yeah. So
it could have been more like that. I don't know, but that's a good point. Yeah. It could have been track, which I know I've heard or seen, you know, where they lay down the track and then they can erase that digitally later. So they may have done that. I'm not sure. Or could have been handheld, really. It could have been like a Steadicam and, you know, just a person like backing up with the camera.
Yeah, it's a cool, like, continuous shot. It's sort of predates the Birdman.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah.
In case they did have to do any trickery, I don't know. This is a great set. I like all the little details that are carried over from the comic. There's all kinds of graffiti and posters in the background.
Sure.
I don't know if you guys covered it last week during the fight scene, but there's all these different ones, like the African famine relief.
And yeah.
There's the Pale Horse posters.
Oh, yes.
And something called Punk Bomb, it looks like.
Okay, I couldn't tell what that poster said.
It's so hard to read, but I think it comes up as they're walking up the alley as well, so you can kind of see that.
Yeah.
Well, Thomas, you know the Pale Horse thing, that's a special thing for Travis, I think, especially.
Yeah.
Really?
As being a band, it's used from the book, you know, and it's a band that keeps coming, keeps waiting. It's going to appear closer. It's coming.
It's on its way.
The whole time.
It's imminent. Well, yeah, of course, that's the reference to the apocalypse and this whole movie.
Yep.
The whole theme of this story is apocalyptic. This the end of times and like this cataclysm that
Doomsday
everything
clock
is leading up to.
Yeah. Yep. As far as like the set goes, I also really like that they used the set and they constructed, you know, all these buildings. And you know, a few times it can feel a little bit like not quite as bad as like the Batman 89 and Batman Returns, where they're inside a soundstage kind of thing and they've built, you know, Gotham City in quotation marks, but it's like the same, you know, four buildings that you see, you know, across, you know, if they set the camera up one and point at one direction, you're going to see the Monarch Theater next to the Flugelheim Museum, you know, next to like whatever the city, you know, or, you know, whatever. Like I remember those movies being really bad about, you know, that set and, you know, everything happens on the same street corner basically throughout the entire movie.
It's been so long since I saw those movies. I don't think I ever noticed that.
Yeah.
Now I'll never be able to not notice
it. Right. Yeah. Sorry about that. but here they do a better job, and I know that they redress a lot of the buildings. One of the bars that they construct is also like the same, you know, front that they end up using in the flashback later on in Vietnam. So they're able to like do completely different, you know, set decorating and dressing up the buildings and everything. But occasionally, though, there are some shots where you see, you know, the same couple buildings, you know, across the street or next to each other or that kind of thing. But yeah, I agree. I do like that they make the most out of their sets and that you can, I don't know, I think they really do a good job with that. Yeah, like you said, with all the graffiti and everything, that helps make it feel a little real. And there's like, you know, a random wooden pallet like in the alley just, you know, happened to be there, that kind of thing, which is, you know, kind of stuff that you would see, you know,
and would probably make a good weapon.
Sure. Yeah,
cornered. Last bit I had about the set dressing is and that graffiti is the fantastic on the right. Someone has written fantastic, which is nice to see in such a grim city that somebody was feeling up to writing something positive on
it says fantastic.
I think it does. And then of course the classic graffiti that gets carried over from the book which is the New Frontiersman.
Oh yeah.
What does it say? In your heart you know it's right, and then someone puts wing.
Yeah, yeah.
Clever.
And the New Frontiersman is of course the conservative paper, which we saw in last week's minutes, kind of the stack of papers that gets delivered to the newsstand by Seymour.
And a certain someone being very particular about getting his copy.
Oh, yes.
From Bernie.
Yeah, and Bernie's got that certain someone's best interests in mind. He says, why do you even care about that right-wing rag, right?
Yeah.
They don't have your best interests in mind. Whatever. is that? I don't even know if that's in the director's cut. I watched the ultimate cut finally preparing for this. And Speaking of which, in the ultimate cut, this is around this minute is where we cut to one of the Black Freighter segments.
Right. I think it's... It might be right as soon as they leave the alleyway, or like... Yeah, it might be kind of between this... In this minute, I think.
Yeah, Lori's on her way out, and then I think it fades to black or something.
Yeah.
And comes back. And I didn't realize that they shot new material or different material, like live-action material.
Yeah, it's kind of like all bookended issue. With the newsstand guys most of the time, yeah.
It works a little better than I thought it was going to, although it's still not perfect. I had watched the Black Freighter like special feature or separate DVD or whatever when it came
standalone
out. Standalone thing. Yeah, right. It's nice to have it back in, but I think the director's cut is the proper way to view this.
Yeah, I haven't actually sat down and watched the ultimate cut, you know, by itself. I've watched, you know, this director's cut, and I've watched the Black Freighter, you know, standalone thing as well by itself. But
well, God help me, I haven't watched the whole thing.
Yeah, because what is it like?
I think it's 4 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
Or 3.5 hours, something like that. We got some not tops lying in the background
doing
some outstanding hurt acting. Like just rolling back and forth on their backs. It looks pretty comfortable. It's like the end of a yoga session. Just lie there. Just be with
your
pain.
Well, that's a crazy thing for this 5 minutes that you have, or I mean right here. I mean, the last 5 minutes last week was the great amount of the fighting that you're missing. If you were ever interested in that part of it, you kind of missed out.
I couldn't bear it. I couldn't have possibly you're sat through and keyframed through that frame by frame. No, I have kind of a tender constitution.
Yeah, I'm okay with the fake stuff. It's if I know it's real, that's when I can get a little sick.
No, even the computer generated bones cracking and it's awful.
Yeah. Wow. Well, and then back to the very, very, very first couple seconds, you know, the one thing we didn't quite point out, neither of you have pointed out yet, at least, is Dan fixing his hair again. He did that not in front of her when she first knocked on her door back 2 or 3 weeks ago, whenever that was. Crazy. And and now he has to fix it again, but in front of her.
Yeah. I think it's kind of gets lost, I think, between last week, like, you know, the end of last week and the beginning of this week. There's like kind of that moment right before I think he fixes his hair that he starts like fumbling for his glasses, and he does that like suddenly he has to get all squinty eyed, and it's like an Attack of the Clones when Yoda is just, you know, been doing all these flips and fighting moves and everything, and then suddenly has to hobble over to get his cane, you know. It's like suddenly he's you know, this half blind
Mr. Magoo.
Yeah, basically. And then they get the whole hair fixing thing. So
he's got to assume his secret identity as a mild mannered what is Dan?
Retiree. We've talked a lot about Dan, and like he just wants to be an old retired guy like Hollis, you know.
Don't we all?
Yeah. And we're not super clear on like what he does, what he fills his time with. We know that he's written, at least in the book, like we know he has written some papers. He's for the most part independently wealthy because his dad left him a bunch of money. I know he'll touch on that, you know, in the movie.
Trust fund kid.
Later on. Yeah, so I think that's kind of... I don't get the sense that he goes to a Monday through Friday job.
Yeah. Oh, to be Dan.
Right, yeah.
I was ready to retire as soon as I graduated college.
Mm. Yeah.
Did you guys notice... I don't know if you guys have been going into quite this much detail... but on the New Frontiersman poster, there's an address.
Oh, is there?
Yeah, there is. For Pioneer Publishing.
Oh, okay, I saw the Pioneer.
Right at the bottom there, and it says 827 West 43rd Street.
Oh. Add that to the Watchmen walking tour.
Well, if you put it on the Watchmen walking tour, I would suggest that you put a disclaimer in there, because I did look it up. Am I allowed to say Google
on this
program? I Googled it. I went to Google Street View. Brought to you by Google. And
that's Google.com.
There's nothing there. There's a busy intersection. It's the it takes you to the intersection of 43rd and 12th Avenue. And the nearest actual address is a ways back, after a bunch of anonymous garages and storage containers, storage facilities. There's the Volvo of Manhattan. Manhattan. Coincidence? I think not for this week.
Right.
And about a block down, interestingly, is the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater.
Oh, nice.
Which is a weird coincidence, because I was actually last night just showing a friend of mine that old television show, the Upright Citizens Brigade.
Awesome.
Which was not to her liking. It did not go well. That can be a particular taste.
Mm, yeah.
So yeah, that's the location.
Appreciate that, because I've been trying to kind of do the same thing, pinpoint the locations and that kind of stuff that we get throughout the movie. And so yeah, that helps.
I feel like if there's going to be an extreme, ideologically extreme newspaper, it's going to be located somewhere underneath that intersection. There's probably a secret hatch or something that opens up into the offices of the New Frontiersman or Pioneer Publishing, whatever that is.
I like it. Dan says, be seeing you. And that's one of those things that I didn't realize that people said until this movie. And it's popped up a few times now. So
it does pop up a couple of times. Does Rorschach say it?
Yeah, Rorschach says it right after Dan or Hollis kind of say it to each other. So it's like right after Rorschach breaks into Dan's place after he visited with Hollis the first time. So we know that he's basically been following Dan, or Dan mentions like he doesn't like being followed, you know. So I kind of put it out there, like, is that a callback to, to point out that Rorschach was following Dan? So
a little bit of a tip of the hand.
Could be, yeah. I'd like to think so.
I wrote down that phrase too, because that's something that stands out to me. It's one of the recurring things in this TV show from 1967, this BBC show called The Prisoner.
Mm-hmm. Huh, okay.
With Patrick McGoohan, and it becomes a salute. Like, he's this secret agent, and he's been placed in this village, this mysterious village. It's not clear by what political side and who his friends are, who he's not to trust. He basically doesn't trust anybody, but it becomes a salute. And in order to sort of fit in to life in the village, he starts saying it as well, be seeing you. And there's a hand gesture that goes with it too.
Huh.
And so I like to think in this alternative timeline in the mid 80s, that show was a lot more popular than it is. It's kind of a cult classic here in our reality. But I like to think it picked up and people started saying that phrase. Or I feel like it might be a Britishism that Alan Moore sort of inserted into the comic. He does a good job of writing Americans, but that's one, I don't know, maybe that's one sort of lingering Britishism that made its way through.
Right.
Who knows? Speculating.
And I believe in our Facebook group, least one person postulated, it's maybe, been more likely, more understandable that it would have been from the Prisoner, as you mentioned, if it were Grant Morrison having written
why is that?
Instead of, I think because he's just alluded to it more, maybe to that show, and its quirkiness is kind of more in line with Morrison than Moore, maybe. I have a feeling.
all these guys are all into weird stuff.
Yeah. Let's see. So yeah, anything, we don't really get much of the, you know, Dan showing up at Hollis's. Hollis tells him he's late and then tells him that Dr. Manhattan just lost it. So
lost what?
What's that?
Go ahead.
Lost what?
His keys.
Mm-hmm. I had that note too. And then I also had for the late, line is that you know, they really have that set of a time.
Right.
I mean, you know, is it really that meaningful that they sit down right at 8 o'clock or,
well, what is time anyway?
Yeah,
what is the present, what is the past? Are we all collapsed into one quantum reality? Why is this blue man naked? These are the important questions that, right, we have to ask.
Well, in the shot on the TV that we see, I think this minute, or is that next minute?
I think it's next minute.
Next minute. Yep, you're right. We'll talk about.
Yeah. Because this one just ends. Yeah, this one just ends kind of mid sentence from Hollis. So anything else for this one?
No, nothing that can't carry over to tomorrow's episode.
Okay. So Thomas, why don't you kind of fill in our listeners on a little bit about who you are and where you hail from?
Well, that's a damn good question. I don't know who I am, but my name's Thomas Butler, and I'm on a podcast called From A to Ziggy, in which we're taking a look at the work of David Bowie. We're listening to and discussing all of his songs in alphabetical order. And if this concept seems familiar, it's basically copying this other podcast that Pete and Alex from Star Wars Minute started with John and L. Adam. And all the wrong show elements. From those guys. It's what was it called? Alphabetical.
Oh yes,
an unbeatable punny name. But we tried our best. I kind of think of it as the sort of redheaded stepchild of the Movies by Minutes family tree. I'm not really sure how I fit in with this this whole community, but we're sort of going along that track.
Yeah, it's tangentially related. Yeah, it's like a cousin.
It's a similar kind of
geekily
obsessive show, close reading takedown of one body of work. And that's accessible at fromatoziggy.com and iTunes and all that stuff, in case anyone's interested.
If you don't mind my asking, what kind of number of songs?
I was going to ask that too.
So yeah, we had to cut out anything that's only available on bootlegs. Yeah. You got to stop somewhere, yeah, right? Please. So so all the officially released songs on albums, on compilations, B-sides, amount to something like 400 episodes. Ooh. And we did 100 episodes in the first year, took kind of a long hiatus, and we've just started ramping up and recording more in the past few weeks.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, all right. I think that's going to do it for today's episode. Thomas, can you make it back on Tuesday?
I'll do even better. I'm going to transport myself 24 hours into the future and be right with you guys.
So you're already there.
I am there right now talking to you.
Okay. So just wait for us then.
I'll let you know what it's like in the future.
Yeah. Okay, good. Well, until then, who watches The Watchmen?
We do.
We do.
Watchmen are over.